GE Healthcare is glad to be the sponsor for this episode of the Donut of Destiny podcast. GE Healthcare is the leading global medical technology, pharmaceutical diagnostics, and digital solutions innovator dedicated to providing integrated solutions to make hospitals more efficient, clinicians more effective, therapies more precise, and patients healthier. Learn more on our CT solutions on the GE Healthcare website.
Hello, listeners, and welcome back to another episode of the Donut of Destiny, the podcast on all things cardiac CT for anyone interested in cardiovascular imaging. My name is Praveen Ranganath, and I'm a radiologist from Dallas, Texas. At present, the most popular coronary CT technique uses what is often called diastolic imaging, where image acquisition is targeted at mid to late diastole. Systolic imaging, however, is less common, but may have unique advantages in certain circumstances over diastolic imaging. On today's episode, I'd like to explore these more fundamental ideas in cardiac CT image acquisition. To help with this, I brought on a good friend and previous podcast guest, Dr. Vineet Balyan, to provide his insight. Vineet, welcome back, my friend.
Thank you, Praveen. Thank you for having me.
Of course, my buddy. Obviously, we're very good friends. We know each other quite well, but I want the rest of our listeners to know a little bit about you. Could you introduce yourself to our listeners, talk about where you're practicing and what your areas of academic interests are?
Yeah, so I work as a cardiovascular radiologist at Massachusetts General Hospital, and my areas of interest are primarily cardiac imaging.
Fantastic. And at Massachusetts General, this is a place where I also did a fellowship. I know that systolic imaging is rather popular in their coronary CT acquisition techniques. So I want to dive into that topic. But before we get into systolic imaging, let's cover some basics together first. Could you talk about what the relatively motion-free portions of the cardiac cycle are and how we've tried to target them with cardiac imaging?
Yeah, so the basic challenge with cardiac or any form of coronary or cardiac CT is the temporal resolution. The conventional CTs, single source CTs, they generate axial images by 360 degree rotation across the patient. So to get a meaningful image, you need to have that full rotation. And to image something which has motion like heart, you want that object of interest to stay still during that period, because if it moves in between, it will generate blurred images. So that's the basic challenge, because with conventional single source CTs, the gantry rotation time is about 220, 230 or even more milliseconds. And that long of a quiet period doesn't exist in the heart. So basically, it's the first adaptation that we do for cardiac imaging is to use half scan using 180 degrees of projection rather than 360. So that cuts your time in half, but you're still in the range of about 130 to 150 milliseconds, depending on the type of scanner you have. So to kind of further decrease that time window, you can use a dual source scanner, which has like two X-ray tubes at 90 degree offset, and you just need to go around by 90 degrees. So that brings down your temporal resolution to less than 70 or in that range. So that's the first kind of technical adaptation that has happened over time. The second place where we can kind of optimize our imaging is to pick that tranquil phase or like motion-free phase in the cardiac cycle. So there is systole and diastole. In diastole, diastole consists of four phases. First is isovolumetric relaxation. Then there is passive rapid ventricular filling. And after that, once ventricle has passively filled and atrial and ventricular pressures have equalized, ventricle kind of undergoes a very slow expansion depending on how much blood is coming from the atria or pulmonary veins or systemic veins. That is called the diastasis, or this is the phase we target for diastole. And the last phase of diastole is atrial contraction, when again there is like rapid filling of the ventricle. If we talk about systole, the first part of systole is isovolumetric contraction, which is kind of could have been ideal because the heart doesn't move at all during this time, but the phase, this phase is very small, so we cannot target that. Then there is rapid emptying of the ventricles, which is followed by once the ventricle reaches the maximum pressure. After that, there is like second part of systole, which is relatively a tranquil phase compared to the rest of the systole. And it also, once this phase ends, we go into isovolumetric relaxation. So we kind of want to capture that, combine these two phases, the second half of systole, like end of systole, and the isovolumetric relaxation, to kind of get another tranquil phase.
So Vineet, let me see if I can review both the technical as well as the, we'll call it, physiologic components of how we try to target motion-free portions of the cardiac cycle. Let's start with the physiologic part first. So there are several phases of relative quiescence in the cardiac cycle.
Yeah.
In systole, we have isovolumetric contraction, which is very rapid and likely beyond what we can currently capture with the technical parameters on our modern-day scanners.
Yeah.
Then we have end systole into early diastole, where you've completed the majority of ventricular emptying and we're about to move into isovolumetric relaxation. So that is a potential period in which we can target imaging, and we'll call this systolic imaging for this conversation. Mm-hmm. And then lastly, we have the conventional diastolic imaging, which targets, as you described, diastasis, the point at which there isn't a dramatic amount of ventricular filling and therefore relative motion free of the heart. And then from the technical side, the dawn of cardiac CT started in the era in which single source scanners were the only option that was had. So the first forays into cardiac CT involved half scan, 180 degree scans with a single source scanner. And as you've alluded to, modern day, certain vendors in modern day scanners offer dual source, so two X-ray tubes offset by about 90 degrees, which helps further optimize the temporal resolution and therefore narrowing the window of time needed to acquire pictures. So that's perfect. I know that beta blockade is a significant component of diastolic imaging. Could you describe briefly why we use beta blockers for diastolic imaging?
So we just talked about diastasis. So this can be like a very long quiet period in the cardiac cycle at slow heart rates. And it ceases to exist above like 80 beats per minute. So that's why people early with using, especially using single source scanners, you need like a very wide acquisition window, and that existed only in diastasis at slow heart rates. So that is the basis of using beta blockers.
Excellent. Okay, I think this leads nicely into talking about why do systolic imaging. So could you briefly describe some of the advantages of systolic imaging over traditional diastolic imaging?
Yeah. So most obvious advantage is no need for beta blockers, because you're no longer targeting that phase of, you're not no longer trying to maximize that diastasis. Also, the systole is relatively fixed at heart rate changes. Like if heart rate changes from 80 to 90, you will kind of lose your entire diastasis, but you will still have a quiet period during systole at relatively higher heart rates.
Got you. So for our listeners that don't do systolic imaging, could you describe the range of heart rates at which that systole, that end systolic time remains relatively static? Is it up until a certain heart rate threshold, 100 or so?
Yes. So I don't think there is any data, so credible data to back that up, but I'll speak from my experience. With dual source scanners of current generation, like Force, we can get reasonable imaging up to like 100, 110 with prospective scans, and maybe you can stretch it to like 120 with a retrospective acquisition. But you can get meaningful images from heart rates ranging from 50 to like 120, which captures almost 99% of the patient population that we serve.
Wow, very impressive. But as you had mentioned, you are working with dual source equipment. So can you go into a little more information about the equipment requirements to perform systolic imaging? Many of our listeners may not have access to dual source equipment. So I'd like to cover, is it feasible on non-dual source equipment?
I have no experience of running coronary exams for systolic on a single source, but we do, like for coronary. But we do use our single source scanners for other protocols like TAVR. And on those, I find it challenging. So I think to make it possible, you probably need a dual source scanner. So the basic reason here is because the tranquil phase in diastole is much longer, especially with beta blockers at slow heart rates. But even the systolic tranquil phase is rather small. And that is kind of doesn't extend like beyond, I would say, 120 milliseconds, even at slow heart rates. So you need to bring your temporal resolution below 100 milliseconds to be able to capture that.
Okay, that's super helpful. And I'd like to emphasize that one more time. The window of time where the heart is relatively quiescent at the end of systole, beginning of diastole, is less than 120 milliseconds. So equipment that's on the market that has a temporal resolution of 120 milliseconds or greater will likely not be able to capture motion-free pictures at end systole. Therefore, to get motion-free pictures at end systole, you need equipment that has temporal resolution acquisition capabilities of less than 120 milliseconds. For example, modern-day dual-source scanners.
Yes.
Perfect. Okay. You mentioned that a lot of this information is anecdotal, and there isn't a lot of data on this particular topic of systolic imaging. Could you summarize perhaps whatever data is out there about the quality of images that are able to be obtained with systolic imaging?
Yeah, so there is like initial paper that I find on internet is a paper from Seifert et al. From 2007, published in AJR, where they speak about comparisons of systolic and diastolic reconstructions using dual source CT. And they kind of go in detail, like which works best when, and they kind of say that at more than 80 beats per minute, diastolic doesn't work. And systole kind of works in most of the cases, but at very slow heart rates, it can be challenging because we want to go from the end systole to and extend the scan into the isovolumetric relaxation. And if kind of heart rate becomes very slow and you are just in the systole, your RCA will be kind of a little, have some motion in its mid segment.
Got it, Vineet. But the paper you're describing is from 2007, which I presume predates the existence commercially of dual source scanners. To my knowledge, Brian Gushadra and the group at Massachusetts General published some of their experience on dual source scanners in the late 2010s, 2016, in International Journal of Cardiovascular Imaging. And he talks about some of the advantages of dual source systolic imaging. Could you tie in that paper with concepts of relative versus absolute timing, which I think we haven't quite touched on yet?
Yeah, so with the second paper from Brian, which talks about absolute time delays, touches on how absolute time delays from R-wave are much better than a percent reconstruction because with beat-to-beat variability, first thing is your diastole changes a lot, systole changes much less. But even with systole, if you are using percentages, then your different heartbeats won't line up perfectly in a perfect manner. So you need absolute time delays because systole is relatively fixed in terms of milliseconds rather than percent. So it will be like, it will take about 250 milliseconds every time. So if you use absolute time delays, your different heartbeats, anatomy captured in different heartbeats will line up even better. So that's the paper that touches on that. And that also describes the technique that we still use. We start our systolic acquisition from after 200 milliseconds after the R wave, and we extend it up to like 420 milliseconds.
Great. I think that's a good review of not only some of the data that has supported the use of systolic imaging, but also this concept of absolute versus relative imaging in cardiac CT acquisitions. Most of our listeners likely use relative imaging, which in layperson's terms is percentage imaging, going from, say, 40 to 80% between the RR interval. But what you're describing is an absolute time delay from the first R wave. So could you remind us what was the acquisition windows for? Let's do both. Could you describe the absolute timing delays for end systole versus, say, mid to late diastole?
For end systole, the protocol that we use, we target from 200 to 420. And this is a big range. Like we said that there is less variability with heart rate, but there is still some. So we want to capture, we have a standard uniform protocol for everyone. So we go from 200 milliseconds to 420 milliseconds. For Dastly, I personally don't have much experience. I think over there, people still use percents. And so I cannot come up with a number where exactly the diastasis will be, but I know it changes with heart rate.
Okay, I think that it highlights another potential advantage of systolic imaging in this sense, in that beat-to-beat variability or arrhythmias or multiple premature atrial ventricular contractions do cause quite a bit of difficulty and challenges with traditional diastolic imaging, in that diastole doesn't last the same length of time from beat to beat. So in patients with arrhythmias, I presume y'all are using systolic imaging. And would you mind going into that a little bit further, say for atrial fibrillation?
Even with a PVC, the systole of a regular beat and a PVC will line up much better than the diastole of the two beats. So it has more tolerability of beat-to-beat variability. Also, it can tolerate some degree of PVCs. And we actually nowadays use arrhythmia rejection, so we basically repeat the other slice. But even if you don't repeat it, a systole will line up better in this case.
We've talked a lot about the advantages of systolic imaging in certain scenarios over diastolic imaging. I want to move now to potential disadvantages. We've obviously highlighted one of them, in that you need specific equipment in order to perform it in the current era. You likely need dual source equipment. Are there any other potential disadvantages of systolic imaging?
Yeah, so I think we briefly touched upon a very slow heart rate. So your RCA and CIRC can be some blurred if there is like very low heart rate, because you never extended your excision into your isovolumetric relaxation. That is one. Second is because we are not using, with this technology, we are not using beta blockers. So if someone happens to have a heart rate of a very high heart rate, so that can be a challenge.
Got it. Okay. You had mentioned that at your institution, you do not use beta blockade, but I presume you use some vasodilation medications, nitroglycerin, ivabradine,
whatever. We do use nitroglycerin as a patch.
Got it. Okay. Do you know of any institutions or any of your colleagues that are using beta blockade for systolic imaging? And if so, why would that happen?
Yeah, I mean, it technically doesn't make much sense, but there could be a rationale. Like even if you're using systolic, you are slowing things down and maybe you are maximizing even your systolic quiet period, and your excision window can be shifted to much later time than the typical one that we use. But there is, because that our temporal resolution with the scanner now is 65 milliseconds, and even the systolic quiet period is kind of reasonable, of a reasonable length. So there is no real incentive to use that, but some people might be using. I'm not aware.
Do you then think that systolic imaging should be the standard acquisition technique on all capable equipment?
I would advocate for that. Speaking from my experience, I've been working in this hospital for 8 years and looking at coronary CTs. And I mean, I can't find any argument against that.
Okay. Wow. That's quite a bold claim, because you're certainly in the minority relative to the remainder of the country and the world who, at least anecdotally from what I've seen and heard, perform predominantly diastolic imaging. And with that in mind, there's still a lot more growth in the field of cardiac CT. There's plenty of programs that are starting, and wanted to get your advice on those out there starting cardiac CT programs and how to approach systolic and diastolic imaging workflows.
Yeah, so biggest challenge with cardiac CT, like conventional cardiac CTs, use a beta blocker, and because of that, you need a lot of nursing staff. You need to monitor the patients, and you need to also kind of watch their heart rate. Once you give them beta blocker, that can take a while. So it kind of kills the workflow efficiency. If you go with the systolic and you don't need beta blockers anymore, your throughput increases. So especially for new centers that are trying cardiac CT, that can be like really helpful to kind of keep the demand that it puts on the system to a minimum, and having some efficiency out of it.
Excellent. Okay. I mean, overall, I think this has been a really nice talk covering not only the fundamentals of how we try to capture motion-free pictures of the heart by CT, but also the potential advantages and disadvantages of systolic imaging in coronary CTA. So Vineet, thanks a bunch. Any final thoughts before we conclude?
Yeah, so I think a lot of lack of progress on this front, partly it is because lack of equipment, like not many places have dual source scanners. Also, the lack of publications. I think we have been using this technique for like in excess of 10 years, and even we published just one paper. So I think as a community, we need to look into this, and we need to maybe increase the awareness by either through conferences or through publishing more. Also, like some kind of resistance to this comes from like our natural tendencies. Like we are kind of, once we are set into our ways, it's hard to change. So this technology came, the dual source technology was introduced later. By that time, most of the programs had their protocols in place. And so there was no real incentive. But I think these days, because of the high volumes, I think everyone has an incentive to use it, because I'll give the example of our institution. When I was a fellow back in 2016-17, we were doing like maybe 10 to 15 cardiac CTs total, and maybe 5-6 of them were coronaries. And right now, although we have expanded to new sites, also, we are scanning on more scanners, but now we do like 60, 70 cardiac CTs every day. So if volumes are growing so much, I think there is an incentive to kind of use systolic and get rid of all the medication challenges and inefficient workflows so that we can kind of increase the throughput and serve our population that needs to be served with this technology.
Vineet, that point is very compelling. It would be great for the community of cardiac imagers to see not necessarily the equivalence in image quality of systolic versus diastolic, which I think has been supported quite well by the small but currently existing literature, but rather improvements in throughput of imaging centers, both in the hospital and office setting, for utilizing systolic versus diastolic imaging. That comparison, particularly if it would demonstrate a faster throughput of patients with that particular workflow, would be very compelling for our practitioners out there who are just starting or wanting to modify their current programs to help meet this ever-growing need of our patients to get high-quality cardiac CT. So great points there, Vineet. Thank you very much for not just that, the entirety of the conversation we had and your contributions to the community. It's been fun to be friends and chat about this, but also from the perspective of all of cardiac CT, it's great to have your expertise, and thanks for presenting it on this forum.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Absolutely. Thanks again, Vineet. And to our listeners, of course, thank you as always for tuning into the podcast. If you like what you hear from us, please rate, review, and subscribe. That helps others out there find this type of content. Once again, this is the Donut of Destiny. Cheers.
For over 60 years, Diagnostic and Interventional Cardiology, DIAC, has been a trusted source for chief cardiologist, cardiologist, electrophysiologist, interventional cardiologist, and cath lab leaders. Keep on top of the latest industry happenings in technology and trends by subscribing to a free e-newsletter at dicardiology.com.